Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
There are two famous philosophical ideas about death. One from Plato and one from Spinoza. The first is that a philosopher has a vital concern with death and constantly meditates upon it. The second is that the wise person thinks of nothing so little as death. Perhaps the truth is somewhere in the middle. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Renee Garfinkel, your host on the New Books Network with the Van Leer Jerusalem series on ideas. We're pleased to have Betty Reutemann on the show today to talk about her newly translated book, The Fascination with Death in Contemporary French Thought, A Longing for the Abyss. Betty Reutemann, French-born professor emerita at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, taught in the Department of French Studies and the Department of General and Comparative Literature, where she held the Catherine Cornell Chair. Betty Reutemann, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
With the exception of hospice workers, pathologists, and perhaps a few other professionals, most people try to avoid the topic of death. What attracted you to explore the French philosopher's fascination with the subject?
Actually, I was teaching all these modern authors in classes, in MA classes. And at the beginning, I was not attentive to that. But first of all, it was the central theme of all these modern founding texts of the 20th century in France, so you cannot avoid it. But when we worked more deeply the text, we realized that there were some specific harmonics of what was said. It was not only pure existentialism. It was not only noting that life is so hard, especially in the 20th century, where you had so many wars and tragedies, but there was something else behind what was said, and that's what we tried to analyze with the students.
You write that the cultural focus on death and on forsakenness really started in the interwar period. Why do you date it from that time?
No, it mainly began in the being in the focus of the history of ideas, mainly in the 19th century, but. In France, I had to concentrate on a specific period, and in France, especially it all began after the French-Prussian War in 1870, and it's then only that Schopenhauer and all the German philosophy entered France, and was there was a reception and a special ear and a readiness to understand and to read these philosophers, all the German symbolism and romanticism. This arrived to France more at the end of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century. But the period I detached or chose especially began between the two wars, because actually it's a special event in the history of philosophy that Alexandre Kojève gave a seminar on Hegel in the 30s in Paris, and it was like
a seminal event. It was an inflection point, turning point.
It gave the first push. Something was in the air. And you had also French symbolism, but the end of the collapse, the general collapse of all ideas and of ideals and of beliefs, of hope, began with the first World War in France. And then you have always this delay until it penetrates the intellectual world. And Kojève presented his Hegel, was nothing really to do with a real one, and a different aspect of Hegel, which was the obscure one, the knightly one, and the negative aspect, negative side of Hegel, and this attracted all the intellectuals of the time, much in all fields, and that's why I decided just to make it clear, it was a turning point in the history of philosophy in France and in the history of French ideas.
Many people say that the awareness of death makes life more precious. You have a lovely sentence in your book that reads, "Bewitchment of death in the name of a more intense life." Can you tell us about that? Is that something similar to why people do things that are thrilling and dangerous, like extreme sports, or does it mean something else?
No, in Kojève's mind, it was definitely that. It was transformed afterwards by the generations and intellectual coming afterwards. But for Kojève, it was a kind of humanistic claim that man is something else than nature. He's more than the world around him. So he even says that the instinct of survival, the desire for life, is the desire of the animal. This is an animal instinct. And man has to show that he's not part of nature. He's not part of what is given in the world. And so the only way for him to prove this difference is to find something else, something which doesn't belong to the world, something which doesn't belong to the natural life. And in a time when metaphysics do not answer, do not give any answer, and of course religions, theology do not provide any answer, so the only way out, anywhere out of this world, is death, which I understand as a metaphor for escaping, for affirming this basic difference, which is actually an idealistic difference. Man is not matter. So man is death.
I see. So you mentioned that for these philosophers, religion and metaphysics provided no path. Would you say that the fascination with death is also the secular search for an absolute in the absence of God?
Yes, that's my main thesis. I would not like to say that I have a thesis because it's too formal. But while dialoguing with this text, I heard something which was very lyrical, a kind of enthusiasm each time they spoke about death, nothingness, void, everything which sounds or should be despairing. Actually, I became convinced that that death is the name for a search for transcendence, a secular transcendence, exactly as you said, but a transcendence which is not the one that our culture, philosophical Western culture, has used us to practice, to read, to know, because Western metaphysics offered only an absolute which was completely a stiff fixation, a kind of perfection which was spheric, circular, something which closes on, upon you, and the modern man, is a Kojevian man, is one who needs liberty, who needs dynamic movement towards the unknown, trying always new things, and feeling that he's gliding, never the same, undeterminate, and for that you have to run away, not to be caught in the trap of metaphysics, of immobility, of perfection. You need going out, and this exists. That's what he was calling, Kojève and the followers were calling death, but they did not mean to die. They meant to live in another way, to define man and his value in another way, which was not the the fixed and contented manner that of previous definitions. I don't know.
Now, we find the fascination or attraction or of involvement with death, even in primitive cultures, where human sacrifice was a practice of ancient religions from Mexico to the Middle East, basically everywhere around the world. How would these philosophers view that practice?
I think you are thinking of Georges Bataille. Georges Bataille, who was the first who related to Kojève's teaching. And what I have to specify is that actually Hegel himself, the young Hegel, was in favor of suicide. I mean, he was proning violence, wars, and this face-to-face with death, because that's the proof of the value of man, of the singularity of man. But then, when Hegel wrote the Phenomenology of the Spirit, then he realized that if man has to die to reach, in order to reach himself, to reach the consciousness of being a man, of his humanity, so if he dies at the very moment he grasps the understanding and the consciousness of himself, so you lose the game. So Hegel himself backed down and had to think it over again. And that's why he introduced the dialectics of the master and the slave, a way not to go straight to death. The Hegelian hero doesn't die. He risks his life to a certain point, and then he moves back. And all the followers of Kojève's seminar, they just, as if they were so sensitive to the feverish description of Kojève, this passionate understanding of negativity of man, the beauty of the man risking his life, that they thought that Hegel was afraid, too much afraid, that Hegel did not go his own way to the end, to the end of his own logic, and they decided we want to go further than Hegel, and Georges Bataille the first said, okay, what is our problem? We want men to die and live at the same time. I mean, to be aware of himself while he is dying. And how can we do that? Because if he dies actually, he cannot realize that he is dying.
Right.
So that's where the notion of sacrifice enters. When you sacrifice an animal, and we know that Georges Bataille even thought of sacrificing a man, but another one, not himself, of course. And so through the sacrifice, you identified with the victim. In a way, you are there. It's it's not far from the Greek catharsis. But so you identified with the victim, and in a way you are dying through the sacrifice. But then, you remain a spectator. You are just only looking at the show, and so that was one of the his main answers to be close to death within without transgressing the limit. That will be the
right.
That will be the central question that all these great thinkers and writers that I analyze with that. What are the other solutions? Like instead of the dialectics of master and slave, which should bring you to reconstructing the system, the synthesis of spirit and matter, but to find other ways.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Right. Now, certain religions, current religions, not primitive ones, ones that are still in the world, for example, Buddhism and to a lesser extent, Christianity, concentrate a great deal of attention on suffering and its meaning. How does that compare with the focus on pain and anguish and death in contemporary French thought?
First of all, I think there is some similarity, because I believe that this choice of maybe not as much as not suffering as much as death and negation itself, but this attitude goes back to mythical also beliefs and to something which is very deep in the human civilization. So, of course, I know better than Christianity.
Uh-huh.
it seems so obvious that through literature, philosophy, they always relate to this image of a dead God. So the salvation comes from death. From the crucifixion, and so there is a similarity. I would stress for the modern times more the need of expressing the liberty of man, something which you can never catch. Man like in modern art or even in modern science, you cannot stop this movement and reach exact answer or fix the stream of consciousness of life. And so I believe that negativity is not a sign, is not really a sign of longing for the abyss, but through the idea of the abyss, longing for new countries, for a territory, for somewhere where you are completely free, completely detached, aloft,
I understand, and you also added a source of philosophy or a view of death that is not from the French philosophers, and that is Kabbalah, a form of Jewish mysticism, which seems to appeal to the postmodern mind. Talk about that, please, and about the Kabbalistic view of death.
As I, if I made my first point clear, so I tried to discover first of all what was beneath the desire for death, and my answer was that actually man is looking, is searching an absolute, exactly as you said, but all the forms of absolute which were proposed to him could not fit, because they fitted like a 17th century mind, something which was too organized, and so my idea was that what the claim of this construction is actually that metaphysics do not provide the answer. The Western world's history of absolute, of transcendence, and that's why, as I was more familiar with the Jewish tradition, I had this feeling that in Judaism in general, and in Jewish Kabbalah especially, you have some kind of other view on the absolute. What is metaphysics? So maybe the modern mind had to reject everything altogether, because life, values, absolute, because the image they had of this image was too stiff and closed. But maybe if you go somewhere else to look for other structures, so you might be able to separate the longings, the wish to transcend, and the rejection of life, the rejection of actual transcendent, of actual absolute. And that's why I went to the Kabbalah, because the Kabbalah doesn't offer us mainly this image of the sphere. When you reach nirvana, I would say, when you reach immobility and you can rest in plenitude for the rest of your life or not life. But
what does Kabbalah say about that?
So Kabbalah offers a kind of absolute, a representation of what absolute is in terms of mobility, of fluidity, of uncompleteness, something which is always unfinished. So there are two main representations of the emanation, like the of creation. It's a beginning, like the genesis, ontological genesis of the world. So the one structure is actually the circular one, as we have in the Western world, which is represented by circles. You have all the spherot, like the 10 basic emanations which created the world, the worlds. These 10 basic emanations are circular, a circle within a circle within a circle. But actually, the Kabbalistic thought doesn't stop there. You have a second configuration, a second structure, which is the structure of the straight line. And as if within, in the center of these basic circles, there is an upsurge of something completely different, which is straight and goes straight on and to the infinite. So when Levinas speaks of totality and infinity, although he was very reluctant about Kabbalah, but it describes these two figures, one of the circles, which would be totality, which is exactly what the modern man cannot bear, and the other one is a straight line. So there is a direction, there is a going further, but a never-ending line. You never stop. There is no limit, and so we should elaborate more. But so the first idea was that you have a kind of representation of the absolute, which is in itself dynamic, in itself never graspable, never defined.
That's very interesting and worth deep study. And it's a very hard thing to articulate. I give you credit for trying to, because mysticism is about the ineffable. So the words are hard to use when it's something ineffable.
Yes, but still, it's very logical and very structured. I mean, and when you have these central ideas, when you read the text and you see that everything gets organized around this. This main idea, it's very mathematical, Kabbalah. You know, it's mystic, but it's arithmetic at the same time.
Yes, many have agreed that math, physics, and mysticism have some things in common. What are your thoughts about the kind of society that results from or is characterized by an obsession with death?
Of course, I come from the Jewish tradition. I believe in life. So if my theory is not true, if my theory is true, so all these people do believe in life, and they are love for life, their passion for life is so great that it cannot be satisfied with everyday ordinary life. So in a way, this is they push forwards or long for something better and greater and more authentic. They are fed of lies, of illusions, delusions. But if I'm wrong, so this is a very decadent civilization, and there is a break between the culture of life and the culture of death. I do not really believe in this longing for the abyss, because I know where they are coming from. I'm thinking, especially I'm trying to say that in my chapter on Derrida, because I think in Derrida this gap is especially sensible. That on the one hand, he really wants to go further and further and never to stop before any obstacle. And if we have to lose everything, let us lose everything. And you hear this. Is really this fervor, this and enthusiasm for nothingness, which covers a longing for the absolute, for the great ideas. On the other hand. As he was the one who transferred the whole problematics in terms of language, text, instead of and semiotics, instead of losing your life or risking your existing life, actual life, you are risking the meaning of the text. So I feel as a child of the generation who escaped the Shoah, so I feel it's a little bit tricky. So in a way, it was their way to express their ideal and all their longing, all what they were missing, and hoping for more and better. But on the other way, they felt secure. I mean, they didn't really want to die. They were not ready to die. They were ready to kill the text. And right. It's more comfortable.
Finally, Betty, we are in the midst of a global pandemic today, with so far over 1 million deaths worldwide just in the past year, this calendar year, which isn't over yet. Can one turn to French philosophy to help cope, understand, live with this situation?
I don't know if they will give answers, but they offer questions, because we are trapped in this confinement, and we feel on our flesh what is to be in a cage, to be closed, not to be able to be ourselves. So that part, they would express it like in the most marvelous way. On the other hand, also, I think they would help us not to prefer death, but help us to ask the basic, real, authentic questions. I believe that Corona has the COVID has this effect on everybody in everywhere on the planet, that the COVID brings us to ask ourselves, what is man? What is really important? What are we living for? And if we cannot actually realize everything or do what we wanted, what remains to us? That's Beckett. That was Beckett, Samuel Beckett's big question. What remains when we are deprived of all what makes our everyday life, all of all our pleasures? What are the basic values of man? What is the definition of a man being a man? Which is exactly the question of Kojève.
Yes, that is the question. Well, Betty, you've given us a lot to think about on a very challenging subject. Thank you for your important work and for being on the show today. And thanks to our researcher, Bela Pasikoff. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, and thank you for letting me practicing my English.
Bye-bye.